The overall theme of chapter 20 is just simply Sheba's revolt. So this will be Sheba's revolt part 2. We saw last week, we saw that it was a revolt out of jealousy. That is, the reason there was this crisis is that David played on the jealousies of the different tribes in trying to bring about his restoration to the throne a certain way. And that jealousy bubbled over. The 10 tribes were talking about bringing David back. He sent to Judah and said, hey, you got to get on board here too. And they became so zealous that it caused a brother against brother, cousin against cousin argument. And then the response of Sheba, where he said in chapter 20, verse number 1, we have no part in David. Again, motivated by jealousy. He may have already had some of these feelings of resentment underneath the surface because he was of the tribe of Benjamin, which was the family of Saul. And, you know, there's a multitude of possibilities, but the bottom line is that jealousy was the one of the driving motivations here. All of Israel leaves. You have the recognition of the danger by David. That is, he said, look, this could be more dangerous than Absalom if we don't deal with this in a hurry. He sent Amasa to go gather the army, and we saw that reservations brought about delay. That is, the people weren't quite sure if they could trust Amasa. Amasa led the army of Absalom, and now he's going around saying, all right, I'm the leader of David's army. Y'all come follow me, or we'll fight for David. I don't know, can I trust this guy or not? And so it led them beyond the time frame that David had set. And he's like, look, if we give this guy too much time, this is going to be a real problem. We got to go. So he sent Abishai, the brother of Joab, out. Joab has been demoted from his position as captain of the host, primarily because he disobeyed David and killed Absalom. From a military standpoint, from a political standpoint, it was the right move. But he disobeyed David and flaunted David's authority publicly. David demoted him for it. We see then the revenge of Joab. As the army goes out, Joab goes out with Abishai and the other men, or meets up with them somewhere along the way. They meet up with Amasa, and when he gets to Amasa, Joab's sword falls out on the ground. He apparently picks it up with his left hand. You remember the story of Ehud. He was the left-handed judge. And before someone could go into the king, they would check their right side and they check their left leg, because if they had a dagger, they'd put it on the inside of their left leg. Because a right-handed person, that was the natural draw. Well, he put it on his right leg. As a left-handed draw, they don't even check that. Well, left-handed weaponry was not the expected thing. So Joab picks up his sword, it's in his left hand, greets Amasa with the right hand, you know, kisses him on the beard, the traditional greeting. He pays no attention to the sword in his other hand, and he basically gives him a gut shot. He takes that sword, rends it into his guts, and the Bible says that, you know, he opened up his bowels, okay? So he's there bleeding out on the ground. It says he was wallowing in his own blood. Gives the idea it was kind of writhing back and forth in pain. It was an instantaneous thing. But the revenge of Joab, number one, for personal jealousy over his position, but also because he was guilty of treason, and if David wouldn't put him down for it, Joab would. All right? So this is just lovely. This is exactly the way that David envisioned things would go when he was going to be restored to the throne, right? No. It's chaos. It's everything's going wrong. But, you know, even though God restored David to the throne, that doesn't mean every decision that David made was right. The way that he handled the things with Amasa and Joab wasn't necessarily the wisest way to handle it. He was trying to send the army out under Amasa, have Amasa get a great victory, and then promote him. All right, Joab can figure these things out. The way he handled the thing with Mephibosheth and Ziba, not the best decision. The way that some of these decisions, the way he even played on the jealousies, not the wisest. Okay, God still restored him to the throne. God still blessed him. Just the Bible's honest enough to show us the warts too. That not everything that he did was brilliant. And this situation could have been handled better. It wasn't. And so now he's got the new captain of the host dead. The army now is in the position of, all right, what do I do? Joab positioned one of his men to stand there next to the body and say, if you're for David, then you're for Joab, follow Joab. So now people have a decision to make. Nobody ever questioned Joab's loyalty to David. So even if they wonder what's going on here with Amasa, ultimately they followed Joab, confident that they would be following the cause of David. All right? So that's the short version that gets us up to verse number 13. All right? When he was removed out of the highway, that's the almost dead body of Amasa, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth-Maachah and all the Beerites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. And they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth-Maachah. They cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench. And all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear! Say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee." And when he was come near unto her, the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" And he answered, "I am he." Then she said unto him, "Hear the words of thine handmaid." And he answered, "I do hear." She spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old time, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel." And so they ended the matter. "I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so. But a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said unto Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall." Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba the son of Bichri and cast it out to Joab. And he blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. All right, we see here, after the revenge of Joab, we'll see the next thing in this chapter is a ruthless assault on a city in Israel. A ruthless assault on a city in Israel. Okay? One thing that we can be confident in saying about Joab is that he was all in. Okay? I like those kind of people. Okay? If you're in, you're all in. If you're half in and half out, I don't need you. At least, you know, we're talking about a team type setting. Okay? Well, we want people to be all in, wholehearted. And Joab, when he was in. Okay? And Joab, when he followed him and he got to the city, boy, it was, all right, no holds barred. We're going to take it down. See, a ruthless assault on a city of Israel. Verse 14 says, he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth-Maachah and all the Beerites, and they were gathered together and also went after him. Okay? You got he and him, all right? The best I can understand it, verse 14, and he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and Beth-Maachah. That he is referring to Sheba the son of Bichri, the end of verse 13. Okay? Sheba, went through all the tribes of Israel. All right? Now, where did this thing start? Where did this major argument and blow-up start? Okay? At Gilgal, near the Jordan. Okay? David is being brought back down. He came down to the fords or the shallow crossing place of Jordan. And Sheba came, the other man that had offended David came across and threw himself on David's mercy. And then some of the others came and helped carry David and all of his household and all those with him, ferry him back and forth across the river. Okay? There was 1,000 men of Benjamin with them at that time. Then there were a few others there were some of the tribe of Judah that were there. Okay, David and everybody gets over. They go back as far as Gilgal, which is just a short way, a couple miles from the Jordan River. And it was there that everybody that had come from all the rest of the tribes, they had gotten as far as Gilgal. So David and the men of Judah, the 1,000 men of Benjamin, they get back there. And then that right there at Gilgal is where we get the argument. Okay? We've got 10 parts in the king and you've only got one. Yeah, well, he's kin to us. And back and forth. And so when Sheba says, what part have we in David? Let's go home. He left from Gilgal, which was not too terribly far into, it would have been more in the vicinity of Ai, Jericho, Jerusalem, in that general region, okay? Just near the, just above the Dead Sea, but in the southern part of Israel, okay? So now, as Sheba starts, declares another revolt and he heads out, he's headed west, away from the Jordan, towards the Mediterranean Sea, and then somewhat north. So verse 14 says, and he, Sheba, went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth-Maachah. If later on in Kings and Chronicles, you find that as one big word or one big name, Abel Beth-Maachah. You can take out the and. And later on, that was lumped together. So apparently these towns were close enough together that they just kind of got lumped in as one community, Abel Beth-Maachah. Okay? This was a town that was located in the very north of the land of Israel. Okay? So he's starting in the central and southern part, working his way west and north, and as Sheba is working his way through Israel, he's not finding a lot of help. Okay? As the saying goes, cooler heads prevail. But as he goes and tries to recruit help, there's some men that are following him, but he goes as far as the tribe of Benjamin. No, you can't stay here. We don't need the battle here. And he goes on to the next tribe. He goes on to one tribe after another, one town after another, and nobody is willing to open up to him. Nobody's willing to be his headquarters, so to speak. Now, Sheba is of the tribe of Benjamin, but Abel is in the extreme north of Israel, in the inheritance of Naphtali, almost to Dan. We hear the expression sometimes from Dan to Beersheba. Dan in the north, Beersheba in the south. So Abel is right up there near the inheritance of Dan. So we're talking about the extreme north of Israel at the time, which would probably be today right near the Syrian border. Okay? And he's going that far and can't find anybody that'll take him in. Okay? So David's fear was that there'd be a large following and it's going to cause even greater problem. Well, as Sheba goes through, he's not finding a whole lot of help. He gets all the way as far as Abel Beth-Maachah, and there, either they took him in or he forced his way in. Okay? Not sure what the story is. We're not told that part. But, so the middle of verse 14, and all the Beerites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. Now, either that means the Beerites followed Sheba, or those were additional people that joined the army of Joab. I think it was they joined the army of Joab. Okay? But nonetheless, they, the army, follow after him, Sheba. Okay? Then we get the they again in verse 15. They came, that's the army of Joab, and besieged him, that's Sheba, and Abel of Beth-Maachah, and they cast up a bank against the city. Okay? Did you notice the dialogue here? Okay? We want Sheba. Give us Sheba, and this is all over with. Did you catch that? No. Why not? Sunday school, it's okay, you can talk. It's not there. Okay? There was no conversation. The point that I'm making is this. They're getting ready to destroy. This is a ruthless assault on the city of Israel. They're getting ready to destroy the town walls, the town, and everybody inside those walls based on an assumption. An assumption. All right. Sheba is inside those city walls. That means they sided with him, so they're dead too. That was the assumption. Okay? Now, is it reasonable to think, okay, if they took him in, maybe they're on his side? Yeah. I mean, that's not way out there. But did they even give him a chance to speak for themselves? No. Did Joab ask for the spokesman? No. Okay? Did they send a messenger? Did they put a note on an arrow and shoot it over the wall? I mean, they could have communicated with him if they wanted to. They did none of those things. They operated entirely on an assumption. Now, in fairness to Joab, okay, this is the second time inside of weeks, or maybe a couple months, but the second time in a very short period of time overall that a revolt has been declared against the king. Joab thought he had ended the thing when he killed Absalom, and now he's like, I can't believe I have to deal with this again. When will these people learn? All right? He's got the army. He's taken out Amasa. He's gathering people, and they're following after Sheba. You've got the adrenaline. You've got the intensity. You've got the emotion of the army. And they traveled all the way from Judah and Jerusalem in the south all the way to the northern part of Israel. If I travel that far, I want to fight somebody. Right? Okay? I don't want this to be a wasted trip. So the army's ready to go. All right? We finally found this guy. Let's get him. You can understand the adrenaline and the emotion and even the fears of what happens if his revolt is successful. They're humans. They're people. And they're just like us. They have these same thoughts, these same questions. But if we make decisions based on emotions, assumptions, feelings, we make a mess. Always. I mean, that's a universal principle. You make a decision purely based on emotion, you're going to regret it. That's the way it goes. Okay? And Joab here made an assumption. He assumed that Abel-Beth-Maachah had sided with Sheba because he was inside their walls. Okay? So he gives the order, all right? We're going to knock this wall down. We're going to take the city apart, and we're going to take out everybody that's in it. Verse 15, they came and besieged him and Abel of Beth-Maachah, and they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench. Okay? The historians, the Bible geographers say that if the place that they think this town stood is the if they've got it identified correctly, there was kind of a hill, an outcropping of rock, and then a natural high place there where this town had been built. So you get the high ground, you dig a trench around it, it's a pretty good spot for defense. Okay? And so they get there, and the last part of verse 15, all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. You know, when we picture that, you think of, you know, a battering ram. Right? If you read the Sunday Funnies, you might think of Hagar the Horrible and all of his Vikings carrying this battering ram against the gate. That may not be exactly how it happened, but the idea is to undermine or to tear down or to destroy. Okay? And so the people put their minds to work. Okay, where's the weak spot? How can we get inside this thing? How can we take the wall down? Okay? That term undermine may well have meant that they were going to try to tunnel under the wall or dig some ditches to put some weak spots in the wall, then they can knock it. Okay? Nonetheless, there's a trench around the city, maybe a moat, and this wall, likely there was an outer wall for defense, and there's many times was a second wall inside. Okay? So they get busy. They've got thousands of people. They got nothing better to do. They want to go home, so the sooner we get this thing over with, the better. So they begin to build a bank. Okay? They cranked up the Caterpillar DC-9 and started pushing dirt, right? No. I mean, at best, they may have had some horses. Oxen would have been too slow to travel with. They may have borrowed some from the neighbors, but basically they're digging by hand and carrying in baskets or wheelbarrows. I mean, that's tedious work. But you put a few thousand people doing that, you could build up a bank pretty quick, couldn't you? A couple days of that, we could raise a mound in a hurry. So they're getting a mound built up. In essence, they're kind of building up a ramp so that they can get over the wall, shoot over the wall, or if need be, get up to the wall, drop their soldiers down on the inside, and here we go. Okay? So they're building up the wall. Now, put yourself inside the city. Here's the people of Abel-Beth-Maachah. All right? They're up in the north. I'm sure, heard David's coming back. David's going to be restored as king. But, you know, they're on the far end of the news cycle. Okay? Now, some of their boys may have been down there at the river to try to bring David back, had come back and told him, you know, whatever. But all of a sudden, here comes a whole bunch of men showing up at the city. All right, here's Sheba and his crowd. They show up. All right, this is unusual. But if they got there before they were able to slam the city gates, they could forcibly hold it open, get all their men inside, and then here's a bunch of armed men who just came inside the city. All right, now what are we going to do? We're either going to cooperate or die at his sword point, so we're going to ride this thing out and see how far it goes. Okay? How closely did Joab show up on his heels? Not sure. But Sheba showed up. Maybe he showed up in a cloud of dust. Maybe he showed up just walking and said, hey, we need to buy some supplies. We need to stay over for a day or two. Well, when Joab and the army came, you're talking about a big cloud of dust and lots of noise from the foot and hoof traffic of all these people. What's the natural response? I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to find out the hard way. Close the gates, bar the doors, close the windows, batten down the hatches. So that's what the city would naturally do. All right, we're going to, like a turtle, we're going to withdraw into our shell until we figure out what's going on. So Joab shows up. There's no messenger. There's no message. There's no communication. All of a sudden, you know, there were windows in the wall that were made for the archers. They would have been had a covering, wooden covering, no doubt, that would open and close, but they could open it up and shoot through the wall. Okay? Think, you know, the openings for a gun on a ship or even sometimes on other tanks, armored vehicles. You could make analogies, okay? But there were at least those openings. They could open it and see what's going on. Hey, they're not getting ready to shoot arrows. They're digging dirt. What in the world are they doing? That's a big pile of dirt. It's getting closer to the trench. What are they up to? This is not good. They only give us a chance to speak for ourselves. Now, everybody in the city kind of pretty much knew what was going on. You think the city elders knew what was going on? Sure they did. Okay? You think all the men, the leaders in the city knew what was going on? Yeah. Which is what is confusing to me, why it was a wise woman who had taken it upon herself to go and talk to Joab. Why? I don't know. But thank God for a wise woman. Okay? If she hadn't been willing to speak up, you know, who knows what happens to Abel Beth Maaca, right? But this woman was willing to speak up. It says, a wise woman cried out of the city, hear, hear, say I pray you unto Joab. Okay? So she either had the courage to stick her head above the wall and risk getting shot at, or she opened one of those windows and said, hey, I want to talk to Joab. Okay? So, but she was willing to stick her neck out. You know, sometimes that's what it takes to get something done. Willing to stick your neck out. Well, I'm going to stick my neck out. What if I fail? Okay? What if God fails? He doesn't fail. Okay? But sometimes, you know, there is fear paralyzes. And it takes one person willing to step up and at least try. That's what happened here. This wise woman speaks up to Joab. Joab is ready to take the wall down, tear limb from limb, take no prisoners. We have a ruthless assault on the city of Israel. Then we have reconciliation through wise communication. Reconciliation through wise communication. What started this whole mess? Jealousy. Okay? How many people did it take to start this fight that looks like it's getting ready to destroy one? One man started this whole mess. Okay? But thank the Lord, what it's going to take is one person, one lady, to speak up and avoid this big mess. The fire of jealousy and self-interest that Sheba had sparked was now threatening to engulf an entire city and possibly an entire country. But Matthew 5, verse 9, part of the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. This wise woman attempted to be a peacemaker. Now, the army of Joab shows up, they start building a mound. Okay, it didn't happen in a matter of 4 hours. Okay, there's a period of time here, hours, a couple days, whatever. Notice, there's a small window of opportunity from the time the army showed up till the time the arrows and the firebombs start flying. That's the window for peacemaking. if peacemaking doesn't happen here, it's probably not going to happen. And this woman spoke up. She said, I want to talk to Joab. And when, verse 17, when he was come near unto her, the woman said, Art thou Joab? He answered, I am he. Then she said, Hear the words of thine handmaid. And he answered, I do hear. All right, customary, back and forth. Are you Joab? Yes. I want to talk to you. I'm listening. Verse 18, then she spake, saying, They were wont to speak in old time. Now that's an old word. Wont, W-O-N-T, that's not a misspelling in your Bible, okay? That's an old English word that means it used to be. All right, this is the way it used to be. It was the custom. They were accustomed to speak in old time, saying, They shall surely ask counsel at Abel, and so they ended the matter. All right? She is making an appeal to Joab. Said, look, we've been a respected city for a long time. Okay? It was a proverb. It was a saying in old time, let's ask counsel at Abel. That is, let's go to the elders of Abel and settle our dispute. That is, there were respected men, respected judges who had the wisdom to settle these matters. And she's also saying, verse 19, I'm one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. We're one of the mother cities of this country. But she also said, look, we're peaceable and we're faithful. Right? Peaceable. Look, we don't want this fight. Faithful. Faithful to who? To God. But in this case, it's an indication, look, we've been faithful to David. Right? We're loyal. Where do our loyalties lie? We're with the king. We don't want a part of this fight. Notice, said, look, we're peaceable, we're faithful, you're seeking to destroy a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up, to devour, to destroy, to wipe out the inheritance of the Lord? Proverbs 25:15 says, By long forbearing a prince is persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone. Proverbs 12:18, The tongue of the wise is health. Proverbs 15:2, The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright. Okay? The way to get your head taken off is to go and yell insults at Joab. We've seen that already. Okay? The way to get Joab to listen, a soft answer turneth away wrath. Grievous words stir up anger. A soft answer, a wise statement, a wise approach, a soft tongue got Joab to listen. Now, he said, look, you're trying to destroy a mother in Israel and swallow up the inheritance of the Lord. There was a principle, a long-standing principle that she may well have been appealing to that's found in Deuteronomy. I believe it's Deuteronomy chapter 20. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 10 through 12 says this. This is speaking of Israel going against their enemies. All right? Bear that in mind. Deuteronomy 20, verse 10. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make thee an answer of peace and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. Verse 12. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then shalt thou besiege it. Okay? There was a principle in Old Testament law, speaking of other nations, that said, if you go and fight against a city, if they're willing to peaceably settle with you and pay tribute and submit to you, don't go wipe them out. Let them be tributaries. If not, besiege it and fight. I can't help but think that's in her mind as she makes her appeal to Joab. Look, you didn't even give us a chance. You just besieged a city and you're trying to destroy it. The law says that even a foreign city would be given an opportunity. Will you not give us the same opportunity? You're trying to swallow up the inheritance of the Lord. That was a very precious thing to every Israelite, the inheritance of the Lord, the inheritance in the land that they had been given. This was their promise from God. And it struck a chord with Joab because he had an inheritance too. And look, you're trying to wipe out, destroy the inheritance of the Lord. And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter's not so. One commentator said this, two qualities are not incompatible but mutually helpful. A peaceful spirit prevents fidelity from becoming harsh, censorious, meddlesome, fierce. Fidelity prevents peacefulness from becoming an immoral weakness, which disregards justice and truth, is ever making unworthy compromises, and would rather sacrifice the highest principles than run the risk of arousing the passions of men by asserting and defending them. Only the wisdom that is from above, which is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without hypocrisy, James chapter 3. In other words, the teaching of the Holy Spirit can enable us to give to each of these virtues, peacefulness and faithfulness, its due place. Both of these were necessary. Okay? Joab's zeal for right was necessary, but it needed to be tempered by peacefulness. Okay? Her desire for peacemaking was necessary, but there needed to be a zeal for truth. That's the balance that we must constantly strive for. Have I figured it out? I'm afraid not. I'm still working on that one. And I believe if we're honest, we all still have to try to strike the right balance. Every one of you has a temperament. Okay? Be it to be a peacemaker, to avoid controversy, to avoid conflict, or be it the dogmatic, you know, this is the way it's going to be, bless God, and you can get on board or get out of my way. Both of those need to be modified. There needs to be a love for truth with love. Okay? Handled the right way. And in this, we see both things being brought together to bring about a reasonable solution. Verse 21, the matter's not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. The woman said unto Joab, I love this. Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall. Give me a little bit, and I will deliver his head, airmail. Okay? And so she goes back and talks to the elders of the city. Verse 22, the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom. Okay? This gives the indication that this was her initiative to do this. It wasn't that she was sent by the elders. It doesn't say she went back and reported. This was her initiative. She went back and said, look, I've got Joab to talk to me. This is what it's about. This guy Sheba that just showed up a couple days ago, he's having a revolt against David. And Joab said, if we give him Sheba, he'll leave us alone. Deal. Bring him here. Okay? Stretch him out. Whoosh. Right? That was the penalty for treason, by the way. Beheading. For centuries. And ultimately, Sheba got exactly what he deserved. He lost his head for his treason against the king. Okay? Cut his head off. Alright? Now this is what happened. Alright? Somebody went out there to the wall. I'm sure they grabbed it by the hair. The other end was probably a little gooey. Grabbed that thing by the hair. Pitched it up over the wall. That's the way I would have done it. Now maybe she carried it up to one of those archer's windows, slid the window open, set it down there and just pushed it out, let it roll down the hill. Okay? Whatever the case, here comes Sheba's head. They do a little DNA test. Yep, that's him. All right, we'll see you. Verse 22, and he, Joab, blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. Okay? He said, a deal's a deal. All I want is the traitor. You give me the traitor, we're out of here. They give him the traitor. Joab blows the trumpet. They return. The Cherethites, the Pelethites, the standing army, those that lived in Jerusalem would have gone back with Joab. But you remember, Amasa was sent to go through all the country to gather people. Many of the men in this army were just men that were drafted for this fight. They were glad to have it be over so they'd go back to their farms, back to their houses, back to their businesses. And so as they begin to retreat, everybody kind of hits the different highways and heads for home. The matter is settled. Wonder exactly when David got the message. You know, I wonder who turned around from the back of the army and went back and told David that, hey, Amasa's dead on the highway. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But we're not given a story about a messenger this time. But the end of verse 22 says, Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. What's David going to do now? He's tried to get rid of Joab, and he can't. This may well be part of his chastening, because he involved Joab in the murder of Uriah. Okay? But for all the bad things we can say about Joab, we can say this positively. Joab was always faithful to David. And in his mind, the decisions that he made were always faithful to the best interest of David's kingdom. Okay? And Joab, he lived there. He became captain of the host again, which we'll see in just a minute. Joab never threatened David personally. But David can't get rid of it. Joab returns. David has no choice but to live with it. He's stuck with Joab. We've seen a ruthless assault on the city of Israel, reconciliation through wise communication. And then we're going to see a review of David's officers here in a minute. But let me just back up and catch one thing that I skipped over here. There are times, you know, there are times when an entire city needs to be destroyed for wickedness. You remember Sodom and Gomorrah. They needed to be destroyed for wickedness. Remember the Gibeonites, what they did to the concubine of the Levite and abused her, and then that became a war cry. They nearly took out that entire city. Rabbah in 2 Samuel chapter 8 of the Ammonites, they insulted David. They deserved to have their city besieged and taken. There are times when it is necessary to handle things that way. There are also times when it's better to cut off the head of the one rebel that's causing the problem and save the entire city from ruin. Okay? And it takes the wisdom of God to know in this situation that we're looking at now, what do we need to do? But in this case, cutting off the head of Sheba, cutting off the head of the rebel, solved the issue for not only that city, but the entire country. That was a far better option in that scenario. Joab returns to Jerusalem. We have then a review of David's officers, verse 23 through 26. Now Joab was over all the host of Israel. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and over the Pelethites. Adoram was over the tribute. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. Sheba was scribe. And Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira, also the Jairite, was a chief ruler about David. If you were to compare this to 2 Samuel chapter 8, verses 16 through 18, you'll find that there's a lot of similarities. Okay? That 2 Samuel chapter 8, that was more at the beginning of David's reign. When he has been established in Jerusalem as king over the whole country, we get a list of David's officers. Here again, in the history, after that revolt of Absalom, when David is established as king a second time, we get the list of David's officers. Joab was over the host. This is necessary to say because he got demoted. Now he's got his position back. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and Pelethites. Same position. Adoram was over the tribute. That's a new position that wasn't mentioned in chapter 8. Okay, the tribute, when you hear that, what do you immediately think? Taxes. Okay, but this, there without question had been taxes already. Okay, the word tribute is a little bit different word that's used anyway, and I think it's better to understand this as a tribute not of money, but of labor. Okay, this. The people that didn't have money to pay in taxes would have forced labor. Those that were made tributaries, forced labor. And there were some that, you know, they would go through and just take certain ones and force them to labor a month for the king as part of their due to the king. All right? This same guy is mentioned in 1 Kings, and he's mentioned all the way down to Rehoboam. So this was towards the end of David's reign, and he made it all the way to Rehoboam. But when Rehoboam sent the guy that was over the tribute, he got stoned. Okay, this is the same guy. But nonetheless, that's a new position. Jehoshaphat, son of Ahilud, was recorder. He was the historian. Sheba was scribe, the personal secretary to the king, maybe even what we might call a secretary of state or a secretary of this or that. Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, and Ira was a chief ruler, an advisor, a close confidant of the king. David has sinned against God. David has paid for his sin three times. The fourth payment will be made after his death. He's been chastened by God. And yet through all of this, David was restored to the throne. God is merciful and long-suffering. David was restored to his throne after all of this mess. God was faithful. God had promised David he would be on the throne and his son would sit on the throne. God kept his promise. He's learning lessons. We see some of the mistakes that he's made. But in this particular chapter, we see the second half of the chapter, we see the danger of operating on emotions and assumptions. Don't assume. Ask questions. But that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even the people that go and do it, don't just assume it's comfortable for them. I mean, they just have to kind of get over that little knot in their stomach and go do it anyway. But don't operate on assumptions. Particularly in a church, in a family, and in a church family. If we operate on assumptions instead of giving our brother the benefit of the doubt, going to them face to face and giving them an opportunity to speak for themselves, you're going to make a mess. Cause a fight, maybe cause a revolt. The whole thing can be avoided if we just deal with it up front as peacemakers, as lovers of truth, as godly men and ladies. And we see here the value of a wise woman in resolving this conflict. David was restored to his throne. God is faithful to his promises. We have to do our part along the way.